I'm Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Wayne.
I want to thank Harlan for calling me and inviting me out of my sinking lethargy and on such long notice to come and spend this New Year's Eve of the millennium. My sponsor always tells me it's just another day, so I'm going to approach it that way. I heard something that nauseated me when I was new, so if you're new, feel free. When you're an alcoholic and you're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, every day is Christmas Day and every night is New Year's Eve. I want to thank Art and Sandy for picking Nora and I up at the airport and bringing us here. We were going to stop for coffee. About a half hour out of town, we stopped at a place called Oni's. The restaurant was closed, so we went to the bar. So Art and I went in to get a cup of coffee, and we left Sandy and Nora out in the truck, and real cheerful waitress. And so we ordered our coffee and such, and about 5 minutes went by, and Art says, well, I think I'm going to go out and see if the girls want to go to the bathroom. And I said, oh, good idea. Now, the truck is parked on the other side of the bar. So Art gets in the truck, and they don't know he's pulling around to the other side. So Nora wonders where I am, and he says, he's in there drinking. Poor Nora's in the back seat, and I'm leaving with you. Then he pulled around the other side, and all three came in. So, what the hell? We played pool, drank some coffee, danced a dance, and then left. Sober. Yeah. You may wonder about that by the time I'm done. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If that's the only reason I came here on New Year's Eve was to share the fact that I love AA and how much I love AA, then it was worth the trip. And if anybody is new in this room, if it inspires you in any way to surrender, to submit, commit, and surrender yourself to the AA way of life, then I've done a good job. If I go home sober, I've done even a better job. Because, you know, the newcomer's most important person in this room, besides me. Nora, let me introduce Nora first. Nora from New Orleans. Come on. That's Nora. She was coming to L.A. to spend a week with me and do the New Year's Eve thing, and Harlan called Monday and asked if I could do it. And I first called Nora because that's a responsibility, and my commitment was to her plans first. And of course, Nora loves AA, too. And Nora said, let's go to Oregon. So here we are. And I got to tell you, I'm glad we're here. We went downtown Seaside last night at 10:30 just in time to see a gang member go after another guy. It was great.
Like you were
Y2K. And I heard the judge talk. That inspired me. It did. And I know these two tables over here contain some of the finest examples of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the rest of the ones are up there on them stars. I know they wrote the names of many deceased members of AA who carried the message. And they're on those stars. And many of them I got to meet in my sobriety, and I'm so grateful I did. I'm glad that that I got here in time to meet some of them. And if you're new in this room, you're going to get to meet a lot of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous in this room and other places that are willing to give up a lot of time and energy to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to those that are still sick and suffering like me. And sicker and suffering doesn't imply I'm just drinking. I was sicker and suffering going to a lot of meetings, dry and sober. And I'm not a happy camper when I'm dry. You ain't going to like to be around me when I'm dry. You might even tell me to drink. Well, you did. All my friends are here. I tell you, you're in line for some great speakers. If I don't muck it up tonight, you got a good thing. I can't pick on most of the speakers that are following me because I know they'll get even. Michael and Ted, Steve and Diana, Dave and Anna, and my favorite, Al-Anon, Beverly and George. I tell you, it's just, where else can a guy like me, a loser at living and a loser at life, find a life like this and be given an opportunity to experience what Not what we're experiencing just because it's the new millennium. That's all nice for the earth people. They get to get drunk and throw a party once a year. You and I do this every weekend across the country. We get together and we fellowship together so that we can stay alive. And I want to leave you with this thought before I get off this podium tonight. I want you to know something. How fortunate I think I am and how we are. You know, we're only 64 and a half years old. Just think about that. 65 years ago, there was no hope for me and you. None at all. Except an asylum, of which the judge referred. And I like them places. I've been in psychiatric ward 17 times. Fifteen by self-sign-in. Now I'm going to tell you why, in case you slip. Where I drank in Illinois, it gets cold in the wintertime. And I'm going to tell you something. It gets lonely. And I'd go to the psych ward. Because on the street, given the way I drank and the way I acted, I couldn't get a date to save my life. Put me in a psych ward and I got a 50-50 shot. I tried to get married on a psych ward. I fell in love with the Virgin Mary. And I tried to talk her doctor into letting me marry her, and he shipped her to another institution. Now I'm going to tell you guys how to do it in case you slip. Psych ward I was on, they bring the med cart right out onto the floor. And they distribute the meds right there. Now, I've had enough Thorazine pumped into me to slow me down till I'm 210. And I know what Thorazine does to me. It doesn't do a thing to slow down my thinking. It's just my feet ain't never going to catch it. Now, I know if it does it to me, it's got to do it to you girls, too. So I just wait till they take about 50 milligram of Thorazine, and I know they can't outrun me. That red face is called identification. Was you ever... No. I love AA. You know, the psych ward is all out like this. We just got doorknobs on both sides. Look around you. There's enough neurosis at that table alone to lift the next space shuttle. I love to drink, too. Did I mention that? It helps to drink if you're an alcoholic. You know, them out there. They say that if all you drank is beer, you can't be an alcoholic. That's all I drank. I love Budweiser. I love Bud. I love Budweiser so much I identify with Louis the Lizard. I understand his heart problems. I'll tell you how much I miss Budweiser sometimes, even today. When you come to California, when you go out to North 405, towards the Grapevine, there's an Anheuser-Busch brewery right on the west side of the freeway. I swear to God, every time I drive by there, I slow down and have a moment of silence. Because I've lost a dear friend. I have to report I eat like fine wine, too. Ripple. Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. Yeah, Y2K can't scare me. I had Ripple in Boone's Farm. You know why I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill? Because when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding internally. And people feel sorry for me and buy me a drink. And I like Mad Dog 2020 great, too. Yeah. Now, I want to tell you what that'll do to you if you drink like I drink. If you drink like I drink, it gave me a terminal condition known as ATD. Alcoholic terminal diarrhea. diarrhea for 6 years. I'm going to tell you something. You've had diarrhea that long, you've got to develop good decision-making skills. And you got to have split-second timing. I was so used to puking, I could hit this whole front row and never touch the top of my shoes. And I have a denture, too, so it was dangerous. I remember when I was married, I'd be in the bathroom was all to myself. I don't care. I could be having a coronary in the bathroom, and my wife wouldn't believe me. She would not come in the bathroom. I was in there one night praying before the ivory altar, just ralphing for everything I'm worth. Everything's, you know, it's all loose. And all of a sudden, I blew my false teeth because I stood up a lot when I should have shut up. And I blew my teeth right into the toilet. It's like, that is a moment of pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because in that instant of time, I know they're gone. You know, if they get to the hole in the bottom before I get there, they're gone. I ain't got no money to buy no new ones. And I catch them just before they go down the shooter. And I think, well, what the hell? I just rinse them off and put them right back in. I sure miss drinking. Now that you newcomers realize I'm a social drinker. You know, I had no idea what was wrong with me. I'm so grateful to be here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because I would have drank like that till I died. I had no idea what was wrong with me. I had no clue. I was raised in an alcoholic family, so that looked normal to me. Now, I'm not going to tell you about my family, and I'm going to tell you why. I think there's enough of us who come to this podium and put down our loved ones in an effort to get sympathy. I did. I was a victim. The unfortunate part of that is I didn't know they might want to get sober. And if they come to AA and find out I talked about them from the podium, pride alone is going to stop them. So bear that in mind. I don't do that. But I will tell you this. If you want to know about my family, just watch Jerry Springer. It's like a Butler family reunion every Tuesday at 11. Being in that alcoholic home didn't make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my personality. I had what my sponsor calls disease perception. Some of you might not know what that means if you're new. I can only explain it to you from the perspective that I understand it, in layman's terms, as I experienced it. When I was new, I was about 3 minutes sober. And my sponsor took me to a meeting in Chicago, Illinois, at the mustard seed because the police were looking for me in Moline for a minor thing of attempted murder. And there's a meeting going on. It's an anniversary of the mustard seed group. And there's about 300 people lined up just like you are right here. You know, the stadium seating. And my sponsor, Barney, and his old cronies are in the first row, and they put us incurable losers in the second row. That's what I thought. And they had a speaker up here speaking, just like I am tonight. And I'm critiquing the speaker. And I'm sitting next to my best friend, Jim. I've known him 3 minutes. And I've been around AA 5 years drunk, so I know how AA works. And the speaker starts speaking, and I can't stand it. I know he's lying. Just like some of you think I am right now. And I nudged Jimmy. I said, Jimmy, he's a liar. He couldn't have drank like that. His guts would fall out. And he kept on talking, and I nudged Jimmy, and I said, Jimmy, he's a liar. He couldn't have done that. He'd be locked up in a psych ward for the rest of his life. And he talked on. I nudged Jimmy, he couldn't have done that. If he'd have drank like that, his guts would fall out, and he'd be in prison for the rest of his natural life. I know. I've been there. And I guess my sponsor got sick and tired of hearing me run off the mouth in front of 300 people. He turned around, looked me right in the eye, and he said, shut up, you goddamn loser. Thank you. You ain't got a thing to say we want to hear. And if we ever think you do, we'll come out to that abandoned car we pulled you out of behind Harvey's restaurant. We'll toot your little horn and invite you in to share. Now, until then, sit there, keep your big mouth shut, or leave. That's what I heard him say. Come to find out, here's what he really said. I hear funny. And I also feel funny. And I think funny because I've got what the big book refers to as a soul sickness. And if God offends you, please don't leave here because of that. And I'm going to offer you the God of my understanding in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one that you offered me when I was new and I hold it precious today. There's three of them because one's not enough. It's in the big book. G-O-D. Good Orderly Design. Our program is a good, orderly design for living a new way of life of which we don't have the opportunity when we're out there. And in the 12 and 12, it says G-O-D, good, orderly direction. It says, when I become willing to take advice and accept direction, I will be set on the road to straight thinking and honest living. And then my favorite, G-O-D, group of drunks. See, when I'm with you, I'm not with me. You hear me? Because when I'm not with you, I'm left with me, and I'm not alone. There should be a neighborhood watch sign right there. I've sat in a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and wondered what's wrong with me. I've heard good men and women come up here to this podium and share their stories of experience, strength, and hope, and I'm sitting out there thinking, I wish I had that. I had no idea what was wrong with me, and it's nobody's fault. I don't blame anybody. It's a condition known as alcoholism. And when I'm afflicted with that condition without a solution, I am doomed, destined, and committed to pick up another Budweiser. And I didn't know why. I had no idea what Silkworth meant when he referred to the effect produced by alcohol. I had no understanding of that. How would I? There's no school out there in the universe that teaches me about my condition. You teach it to me. This is where I learned it. This is where I caught alcoholism, if you will. Until I got here, I thought I was sadistic. Well, I'll just tell you what my last psychiatric diagnosis was. It was a potential homicidal psychopath for a little problem I developed. I'll tell you about in a minute. I want to warm you up to me first. See, when you study martial arts, the first thing to do is they teach you to soften them up. Yeah. I love aid. I mentioned that? Okay. I love Budweiser. And I love it specifically for the reason Dr. Silkworth lays it out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He talks about the 12 and 12, too, and I want to lay foundation for that first. Because if you understand this about me, you'll understand me, and I believe you'll accept me. And you will allow me to be who I am without any pretenses and prejudgments if you understand who I am. Because I know if I understand who you are, I can accept you with all of your pimples, if you will. Whereas otherwise I may not, because I could be afraid not knowing who you are. And if I know who I am, then I know who you are, because an alcoholic is an alcoholic is an alcoholic is an alcoholic. Doesn't matter if you're a man, woman, or dog. An alcoholic is an alcoholic. That ism thing is critical if you're new. That ism, that ISM. It's in the big book. Internal spiritual maladjustment. On page 53, it says, God is everything or God is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What's my decision to be? It's spiritual. On page 55, it says, deep down inside every, keyword every, that bothered me. I knew somehow that included me. Deep down inside every human being, is every man, woman, and child, is the fundamental idea of God, the power of God deep inside. I suffer from a lack of power. It goes on to say it's obscured because of calamity, pomp, and worship of other things. So it's spiritual and it's internal. And then on page Roman numeral 24, Dr. Silkworth says to me through Bill Wilson that I am, quote, maladjusted to life, in full flight from reality, and outright mental defective. Therein lies my hope for the future. Now, you might wonder how that internal spiritual maladjustment affects me symptomatologically as a child of God. According to Dr. Silkworth, Father Ed Dowling, Reverend Sam Shoemaker, and Dr. Harry Tebow, four men who ministered to Bill and Bob, here's how that condition affects me. When I tell you I'm an alcoholic, here's what I'm really suggesting. I realize I look to you right now, tonight, like a full-grown, mature, adult male. In reality, I remain childish, grandiose, and gravely, emotionally immature. As a growing human concern, my natural state is one of growing anxiety, depression, and fear, coupled with an intense desire for excitement. A condition of being which is complicated with and exacerbated by an obsessive, compulsive, impulsive, excessive, controlling, demanding need for attention. Acceptance and unqualified approval. A condition of being which renders me, and as a child of God, restless, irritable, and discontent with life. Now, you might wonder how that affects my mental and emotional nature. Because I'm about half a bubble out of plum. Mentally, my thought life is governed by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, all of which drive me to live my life according to selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, inconsiderate, resentful, and frightened motives in life. Motives which, left unattended in me, aroused and engaged dangerous and life-threatening, and I said life-threatening levels of lust. I don't dare make eye contact right there. Pride, anger, envy, greed, sloth, gluttony. I turned into a pig. I want it all. That renders me emotionally a bit sensitive. Which means I have a strong tendency to take everything I see or hear personal. I don't like criticism. And strange as it seems, I can't stand praise either. Somebody tells me I look good, I want to hit them because I know they're lying to me.
Trying to make me feel good.
When it comes to suffering emotionally, I don't like to suffer emotionally. I don't suffer well. And I don't suffer alone. Socially, I'm a bankrupt idealist and brooding perfectionist who lives defensively and guarded in fear of being found out. As such, I tend to rationalize, minimize, justify, and deny all my actions while casting blame upon innocent people in a vigorous attempt to avoid detection. When it comes to my fellow man and woman, I demand, and I said demand, the absolute possession and control of everybody. And every circumstance that enters my arena of life. Therefore, my response to you is, I am quick to anger, slow to virtue, and I get a distinct, succinct delight and twisted pleasure out of criticizing and judging everybody I see. Just like you are me right now. My outstanding characteristic is defiance. And rebellion dogs my every step. Now, as a child of God, That's a listing of my finer qualities. Anybody want a date? Some people probably going to try to talk to her after I'm done. We all laugh at that, but that's exactly how I've been since I came out of the chute. I've had the ism affliction since I can remember when, and what makes me an alcoholic is when I drink alcohol, it does something to sedate and relieve the symptoms of alcoholism. What that means is it gives me a distorted perception of reality. I have a soul sickness, which means I don't see right, I don't think right, and I don't feel right. Something's wrong with me. And I'll tell you how that symptomatology comes out. All those symptoms I just shared with you, newcomer, I want you to know something. I'm going to put my life online. I'm going to tell you that you're going to hear them symptoms at every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous you go to from now on. But that's not how you're going to hear them. Here's how you're going to hear them. I don't fit in. I don't belong. I don't feel a part of. What's wrong with me? That's it. And I'm going to tell you what that did to me. Somewhere around 8 or 9 years old, I remember I was at home looking in the mirror, and I thought to myself, Butler, it's too bad, pal. It's going to be a long life. And it's going to be lonely because you are butt ugly, pal. Did you see her? And I felt a little retarded, too. You know what's interesting? When you feel that way, if you're alcoholic like me, we have something we do that's peculiar unto ourselves. We act the way we feel. We're not like the earth people who have the power to act better than they feel. When I feel bad, I'm taking you with me. I don't have this supernatural power to just act better than how I feel. If I feel bad, I act bad. If I feel good, I act good. Doctors call that manic depressive. I didn't know that. And I started feeling those feelings all the time, and by the time I got to school, I started developing symptoms of being retarded, developmentally disabled emotionally. By my 9th grade, I got diagnosed retarded, and I got put in a retarded class. And I improved. You know, they kept me in a retarded class till I graduated high school. Never left. It was great. Retarded boys would go to the girls' bathroom and not get detention. I learned early on, you got to go with what they give you. And I was never going to drink. I was never going to drink alcohol. It wasn't an issue. But by the time I was 17 years old and I was in the senior retarded class in high school, of which I was their leader, I took them other retarded kids places they never should ever went. But we had a guy that used to take us retarded kids out on field trips. Tom. Tom to this very day is a friend of mine. Tom's a social drinker today. Tom took me to a party he took me to the senior class dance. I never been out. I'm retarded. I'm isolated. I'm alone. I'm afraid of everybody. My God, I'm 6'3". I weigh 120 pounds. I got pimples where God never intended pimples to be. I just feel bad. And Tom talked me into going to the senior dance. I trusted Tom. Tom took me there. And so I'm standing up against a wall watching everybody dance and have a good time. I don't know what's going on. Tom brings me over this long brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label. I'd have saluted if I knew what it was about to do. I drank that bottle of Budweiser, and I said to Tom, Tom, that tastes terrible. I want a Pepsi Cola. And Tom said, that's okay, kid. You'll get used to it. Now, see, Tom's a social drinker. What he meant was, like all of us who start doing things like that, is I'm going to probably get lightheaded. I'm going to drink too much. I'm going to puke, probably pee in the wrong place, and get used to drinking and be okay. That's what he meant. Now, what Dr. Silkworth says in the big book is that abnormal drinkers such as myself drink essentially because I like the effect produced by alcohol. And that's why I drank. Because somewhere between 4 and 5 Budweisers, I got so damn good looking I couldn't stand it. I went from 6 foot, 320 pounds to 6 foot, three, 240 pounds. I felt bulletproof. I looked down on the dance floor and eyeballed me a blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I forgot I was retarded. Walked right up to her and asked her to dance. And she said, yeah. We danced all night. Found out later that night sex meant two people. I didn't know that. She ruined my... I needed sex therapy. She ruined my sex life. I've been having sex since I was 13 and I was good at it. She complicated everything. And then I had this thing called a blackout. I didn't find that out until I came to AA. I had a blackout that night. Couldn't remember what happened. Tom told me I had a great time. So I said, great, and went back to the retarded class. A few weeks later, my dad calls me and says, pal, we got a problem. I said, what's that? He said, you know that girl you was with? I said, yes, sir. He said, you know she's 16? I said, yes, sir. He said, you know she's pregnant? Whoop. That sounded like a problem. And I said, what's that mean? Do you know in Illinois there's a law? If any boy, 14 or older, has sex with a girl 17 or younger, consensual or not, irregardless, it's called statutory rape. My dad explained that to me. And I said, what's that mean? He says, 20 years to life. I said, even if you're retarded? Find out if you marry him, you don't go to jail, so I fell in love. We went to Palmyra, Missouri, where you can marry your 10-year-old cousin if you got enough money. We got married. We're on our way back from Palmyra, Missouri. My mom and dad are in the front seat. Me and Bonnie and the baby in the tummy is in the backseat, and it occurs to me, I'm 17, married, gonna have a baby, about to graduate to retarded class, and I've drank one time. I ain't drinking no more of that stuff. I'm done. Now, Silkworth also talks in the big book about how we tend to get geographical, which means I want out of here. Well, my brother was in the Navy, and he's in a place called Vietnam. I knew that was a long way from where I was, so I asked my dad if I could join the Navy. My dad looked me right in the eye, and he said, well, I don't know if they'll take a retarded kid, but let's go see. So he shuffled me to the Naval Recruiter's Office, told me to lie on the way, said, don't tell him you're in a retarded class, you tell him you're about to graduate. So, hey, Dad. So I took the Naval Entrance Exam, and I scored in the upper 3rd percentile of the United States Navy. Qualified for any A school. That perplexed my father. They put me in the reserve program so that I could finish graduating high school, and we had that baby. And just before I left for active duty, I turned 18, and I drank for the second time in my life. Now remember, I'm done with Budweiser. See, in the big book, Dr. Silkworth says abnormal drinkers like me experience strange mental twists prior to a relapse into drinking. So I went to this party, and I saw Budweiser, and I said, no, because I don't want no more babies. And I saw this clear bottle of liquid called tequila, and I didn't think that was drinking. So I drank the whole bottle. Now, Tom was there, and he said, don't, you got it, that stuff will catch up to you, Wayne. I said, okay, I know what I'm doing. I drank the whole bottle. I'm going to tell you what happens to me when I drink tequila. I see God. I talked to God. He was on my lap. And I was having a father-son talk. And I was telling God about all these reprehensible, incorrigible, indecent things that was happening to me in my home as an alcoholic and what I was doing to my family as well. And I heard God tell me to go home and kill my family. So I went home and tried to kill my family. I ended up the next day in a psychiatric ward. And I strapped down. And I remember when I came out of that, they had my mom and dad in there. And they had me on a lifetime indefinite commitment. And I remember my mother saying, when the doctor said to my mother, Mrs. Butler, we can't release your son. We're afraid if we do, he will kill you. And we can't take that responsibility. My mother cried, wept like a baby. One of these seven psychiatrists that was examining me during that period of time was in the Naval Reserve. He was an officer. He said to my mother what some of the symptoms were. No conscience. No remorse. I felt no guilt and no shame. And no fear for responsibility for what I did. I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, so what? This doctor says, well, given no symptoms, I know a place where he could do some good for us, given the fact he's in the Navy. And I went to Vietnam. I did good. Never drank a drop the whole time I was gone. I was gone 3 years. I came back 21 years of age. I had no idea that I was in the throes of a fatal progression of which there's no human power that can stop it. I came back 3 years later having not taken one drink. I didn't do any drugs. I saw a lot of my peers doing drugs in Vietnam, and they were getting whacked because they were too out of control to defend themselves. And I decided if I was going to get whacked, it was going to be tougher than that. So I didn't drink or do any drugs. Now I'm going to tell you something. That put a very definite spin on my personality. I came home 3 years later. I wasn't in Vietnam the whole time, but I came home 3 years later. I was 21 years of age. I've drank twice in my life. I'm decorated for bravery. I've got 3 rows of ribbons, and I love the Navy. I finally found a place where I fit. I know how to suit up and show up when you tell me where to go, how to do it, and where to be. My shoes were so spit-shined, the back row could have seen the sparkle. My boxer underwear were starched and pressed. In case of a drop inspection, you just never know. I was captain's driver, had watch standards livery, and I played baseball for the 7th Fleet. I didn't know I felt good about myself at that time. I had no idea what it was. And then one day the captain asked me to babysit his kids, and I said, yes, sir, I'd be honored to. Just like if my sponsor asked me to do anything, I'd do it without question. I just would. Not because he's a cult leader or because he demands that. It's because I love and respect him so much, I'd do anything he asked me to do. It's an honor to be asked to do. It's an honor to be asked to come here and do this. Of course I'm going to come and do this. And so I checked out the ship's company car and proceeded to go pick up the captain kids. And on the way there, a thought came to me from nowhere. It said, Wayne, let's stop and get a six-pack of Bud. What the hell? What can it hurt? Prior to this, we've only drank twice and nothing really bad happened. So I stopped and got that six-pack of Bud and drank it. And then put his precious children in that car, went and picked up another six-pack of Bud, and that's all I remember. I came out of that blackout with my captain 2 inches from my face, screaming, where's my kids? He was asking me, and I didn't know where they were. That really upset him. He called me an alcoholic. We found his kids. I took them to his sister's house for safekeeping. I just couldn't remember because I was in a blackout. I tried to explain to the captain the value of that action. He couldn't grasp it. And he sent me to see a psychiatrist by the name of Joseph Pursh, a lieutenant commander in the Navy who just opened up a treatment program at Balboa Naval Station. And they tested me and said that I had to go into treatment for alcoholism. And I said, you're out of your mind. I've been drunk 3 times in my life. I'm not an alcoholic. By the time I got to him, I had drank 1 more time uneventfully. So by the time I was examined, I had drank 4 times in my life, and I said, I'm not an alcoholic because I know what an alcoholic is. If you're new, I want you to hear this. I had an idea what an alcoholic was in my mind. I seen it on TV. And I seen it in Chicago when my dad took me to Skid Row. There are these guys in raincoats with rope tied around their belt, and they drink out of a brown paper bag. That's an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. And you know, they told me if I didn't go to treatment, they was going to kick me out of the Navy. Now think about that for a minute. I loved it. I had respect. The things I had gone through demanded and commanded respect from people. I wasn't about to walk away from that, but when he said I had to go to treatment for alcoholism, the arrogance and the defiance came forth, and I said, nope, ain't doing it, and I got sent home. I got discharged with an honorable discharge under medical conditions. And I can't tell you how dishonored I felt when I left the ship that day, and how I couldn't recapture any self-respect whatsoever from that day till the day I did my work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I left there and went back to a wife that didn't want me no more. I came home at night, she looked in my eyes, slipped out at night, packed while I was sleeping. I come to find out later the reason she did was they had a guy on TV all that week, a guy named Charles Manson. And she said I had the same look in my eye he had in his. She moved in the middle of the night. She didn't need Al-Anon. No disrespect. But I'm an alcoholic. I found my second wife in a 5-day blackout. We went to Palmyra, Missouri and got married. I came to driving my car with a married woman sitting next to me. And I'm a monogamous man, just for my own personal reasons. And I thought, my God, I saw the ring on her finger and my heart sank. I thought, my God, I'm with somebody's wife. I've gone too far. But she was looking at me with this loving glare. And I looked at her and I'll never forget these words. I said, who are you? Do you know that bothers women? I know what I heard her say. We stayed married for 12 years. Tried to kill each other one day at a time. If you're an alcoholic and you have an alcoholic home, you've been where I've been. And you know how I feel. And we've experienced the same things, maybe in different ways. But my alcoholism progressed, and I don't need to talk much more about that. I'll just tell you that I stumbled my way into Alcoholics Anonymous because of an incident that happened to me. My wife had asked me to go out to get a gallon of milk. 3 days later, after it curdled into cottage cheese, I made my way home. And I had two baby girls that lived with us. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, the alcoholic wake-up call. I'll never forget this night as long as I live. I got home at 2 a.m. and she was at the doorknob the minute I hit the door. And she's wanting to know where I've been. But you see, I can't tell her because I've been in a blackout. I really don't know where I've been. I want to tell her and she does not believe I don't know. I don't know. And of course, the fight was on like it was every other night. We're rolling around on the floor fighting and we woke our two girls up. And I vaguely remember one daughter in the fetal position in the corner screaming for everything she's worth. And I remember the other daughter wrapped around my leg trying to pull me off her mother. And then I had an out-of-body experience. I saw myself take a .357 out of my boot. I put it to my wife's head and I pulled the trigger. And I want you to know life slowed down and stopped. It became milliseconds. And then I realized the gun didn't go off. Gun missed fire. I still got the bullet at home. The .357 hollow point. For some reason it didn't go off. She left me anyway. By the way, if you're judging me right now, I don't blame you a bit. I'm worthy of judgment. A great man once said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And let the first man who is not sinned cast the first stone. So let's remember that we of AA live in glass houses, and my very life depends on the fact that you'll understand me and accept me. I'm not pleading with you to forget what I did. I'm just asking you to understand that I'm an alcoholic, and we are all afflicted with that condition. And thank God we have a place like this where we can come and have the opportunity to change our whole way of life. Because I'm nothing like the man I was, yet I'm the same man. 22 years later, it's an amazing thing. But she did leave. Now, I want to tell you what kind of alcoholic I am. After she left, I curled up by the front door in the fetal position, cried like a baby for 3 days, couldn't move. Making bargains with God right out of chapter 3. I said, God, if you bring her back, I'll quit drinking. Ripple too. God, if you bring her back, I'll sell my gun. God, if you bring her back, I'll sell all my guns. And then I went for the big one. God, if you bring her back, I'll get a job.